Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insight, featuring learning professionals, improving performance to drive business results.
And welcome back to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things going in your world? You have your sister-in-law still in town?
I do, and it's chilly night.
Does that mean fireplace?
No, I don't mean cold. I mean we're going to have chili tonight. This morning I woke up
chili.
To this. Yes.
Like not cold chili.
Right. Chili to eat chili. Absolutely. With the Fritos and the cheddar cheese that Mike Kelly ordered. And we will have a fire in the fireplace tonight. This morning I woke up to the smell of bacon and blueberry muffins.
Man, so, you are just living large over there in the Payton Estate.
It's going to be a rude awakening when Holly gets back and I have to make the coffee.
Exactly.
It's going to be a whole different deal.
Recalibrate.
So, but your wife is coming off a business trip from Hawaii, right?
That's right. She came back from Hawaii over the weekend and now is reacclimating to life in the continental United States.
I was hoping we might see a flowered shirt this morning or something
like
that.
I told her I was going to wear that Hawaiian shirt that they had to wear at the trade show.
They made him wear Hawaiian shirts at the trade show?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I want to see Abby in a Hawaiian shirt.
There's a Hawaiian shirt with her name on it.
So we've got a full day. Later on, we're going to go to our studio in Gwinnett and talk with those folks. But this is going to be a fantastic show. It's Learning Insights brought to us by Training Pros. And our good buddy Leanne Langford is in the studio with us once again, off mic, as is often her M.O.
That's right. The person or the myth? No one's actually heard her speak.
The legend. I think she does all this on purpose just to build the mystique, but she always does such a fantastic job of inviting interesting and informative guests, and no exception this morning. We're going to get a chance to visit with Senior Instructional Designer with LHC Group, Miss Regina Owens. Welcome to the show, Regina.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Senior Instructional Designer. Were you a Junior Instructional Designer at
and
one
you
time?
You worked your way up?
Yes, I did indeed work my way up.
So what does a Senior Instructional Designer do for a living?
Well, we lead the development of the course content. We actually do a lot of project managing to make sure that the needs of our learners are met.
And so how do you find out what these needs are? Is this something that you've just done it long enough now that you're a senior? Or do you have to ask the execs or the people? Or how do you figure out what to even do this stuff on?
Well, that's a great question. There are a couple of ways. We typically receive information from a sponsor. That's someone in management that comes to us and they believe that they've identified a training need.
Uh-huh.
And then we have a meeting, what we call a design meeting, with that sponsor as well as some subject matter experts to clearly walk them through the analysis process to see if there is truly a training need that aligns with our corporate goals. And if so, then we go down the path of design and development.
What's your favorite part of the process?
My favorite part of the process, well, there's twofold. I truly enjoy the analysis piece. I enjoy bringing the subject matter experts together along with the department heads to identify how we can provide the training needed by our clinicians in order to meet our patients' needs. Uh-huh. And once that is fleshed out, I love getting into the meat of the development of the content.
So that's your sweet spot then, the healthcare arena, and even more specifically, the home care arena. Is that right? That's where your focus is?
Yes, home
and
care.
What does home care mean?
Does my home need a lot of care?
Right.
We should talk
it's
after.
Like, does it include chili? Is that my, part of home care?
You know my deck is condemned, right? We had this conversation. Yeah. Can you do anything for my deck?
I'm sorry. I can't provide that type of care.
Maybe we do some training on that.
Maybe, yeah. We'll have a meeting. Well, home care, usually when people think of home care, they think of nurses coming out to the home. And that's,
right.
That is part of what we do. Home care is a larger industry than that. We do provide patient care out in the home, but we also provide hospice palliative care. There's also a division that provides transitional services that allow patients that are not acute enough to be in the hospital to be able to transition into a home care environment. So we provide various levels of care in the home, in hospitals, and in other facilities such as adult living facilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it is it better for the patient and a lot of times to be in their home rather than being in like a hospital or a more formal care
Definitely, definitely. There's been many studies, and patients tend to get better faster when they're at home in a comfortable environment with their families and support systems.
So they don't need a whole lot of medical attention, but they need some, and that's where you're coming
from. Well, that depends. Some of our patients are sicker than others. There are some patients that need clinical nursing care, and it could be to dress a wound or to provide IV injections or fluids. And then there are people who have had devastating accidents, and they need either physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. And there are some people with social problems, and we do provide medical social services as well.
Now, you mentioned the term palliative, which I've come across once before when I sat in on the Ujiria show. Right. Can you describe for the audience, for those who might not know what that is?
Well, palliative care is for those hospice patients that are actively dying, and we provide a level of comfort through various treatment modalities and medications to make their transition from living to dying to death easier on them, and not just for them but for their families as well, because the patient is dying but the family is going through the grieving processes as well.
Now, isn't everyone actively dying?
That is a great point. That is some
sure
of
that's
us.
What their practitioners lead with when they walk in the home, right? That comment.
Excellent point. You're right.
But the I think the hospice element of it, from what I understand, is it's a misunderstood. Like, people think like hospice is like the last day, but hospice be for months, if not years. Sometimes people go into a hospice environment and then they get out of it and then they go back in it again.
Yes,
is that right?
That is very correct. We don't. It's not necessarily someone who has a week or a month to live. It's someone who has been diagnosed with a terminal illness and they need that care throughout.
So I wonder, a great deal of your curriculum and your people that do the job you do in this arena, it must be around what some people might characterize as soft skills, because it's one thing to be able to draw blood or give a shot or something like that, but the people skills that you must have to have in this environment, is it a lot of this human being training, this soft skill stuff?
You train empathy?
We do provide training on how to partner with the families, how to support the families. We don't necessarily call it empathetic care, but we provide training on just the skills that they need in order to understand what the patients and families are going through, how to communicate effectively with them during this time.
Because I would imagine it's difficult. I know my wife's father had a lot of home health care, and he was difficult. Mm-hmm. And then his wife, though, was like always apologizing for him. And to be able to manage those kind of situations, I would imagine that's extremely challenging.
It can be challenging. And home care is not for everyone. Not every clinician can move from hospital into home care. It takes the type of person who wants to be in that environment, who thrives in that environment. So we have a huge recruiting and training effort.
Are there a lot of people that want to be in this, or is there a shortage of these people? It's extremely important, I would imagine. There's a lot of opportunity now as the population is aging. But is this an area that you're always having to recruit and spend a lot of time getting people up to speed and getting them out there?
We are always recruiting. It's not necessarily because people do not want to be in it, but it is there are a lot of opportunities in home care for to work with different companies. If you're a nurse, you can work at a hospital. You can work at a doc in the box, which is what we call the outpatient clinics. You can work in home care. You can work in hospice. You can be a flying nurse, so our therapist. So there's so many opportunities out there. So we have to we're challenged to come up with programs and incentives to keep the best nurses, because when you're talking about working with patients in their home, you're talking about working autonomously. So we need someone who thrives in that arena.
And I'm trying to envision, how do you even help people practice these skills? Because you got the guy who's maybe a little bit of a curmudgeon, he's complaining. You got the apologetic wife. You got the sister-in-law that was a nurse 15 years ago and thinks she knows what's going on.
And then the guy that watched a lot of episodes of House.
And you're trying to manage all these personalities. I mean, is there a way to practice that? How do you, I mean, I can see where maybe you could give them the advice and, you know, hand them the 8.5 by 11 best practices sheet, but do they actually get a chance to practice this?
Oh, definitely. We have, as part of our orientation program, we have a preceptorship where our nurses spend a great deal of time in their first weeks and months on the job partnering with clinicians that have been in home care.
So they like shadow them, or so they're like kind of a fly on the wall and just observing what a good person, how they do it.
How they handle it. And the not only do they follow them and observe, but they also, after a certain number of visits where they are watching and observing, they get to be watched and observed, and then they get feedback.
So then they kind of just change roles a little bit for
yes.
a little bit.
That's smart. But, and then different people learn differently, right? Like some of us respond better to the written word or to that active practice or audio or whatever. So you got to take all that into account, yeah?
Definitely. We use a blended approach in all of our programs. We make sure that we not only meet the needs of those visual learners or those kinesthetic learners, we also have to make sure that we meet their needs in the long term. For instance, we go out, we provide training, or you get a book. That's not the end of it, because 2 weeks later, how are you going to know or remember
right.
that information? So you have to have access to that information when you need it. So we also work and partner with other clinicians that way as well.
Now, is it a challenge in the home setting? I would think it would be like the caregiver has a deeper personal relationship maybe than they would in a hospital setting, where like they're, you know, going from room to room or room to room. But in some of these cases, aren't they spending hours, you know, day after day with these people, and they might get more attached emotionally? And then they have some mourning and grieving because, you know, especially in a hospice situation.
Yes, especially in a hospice situation. Our nurses tend to spend, after admission can take 3 or 4 hours, but our nurses tend to spend on an average about an hour in the home a few days a week. The home health aides, those that provide the personalized care that does the grooming and taking care of their nutritional needs, they spend more time with the patient. In hospice, it's a totally different situation. They do spend a lot more time connecting with that family and
so
the
they patients. Encourage that?
Oh, yes.
Right. So,
oh, yes.
So they want that personal connection.
They
don't want, because, you know, we've all had doctors where they almost on purpose don't want to have a personal relationship. They want to have some distance so they can make decisions not emotionally. It seems the opposite, especially in a hospice environment, that they want to connect and they want to really become part of the family and to kind of help everybody get through this process.
In hospice, we also use a lot of volunteers, and those volunteers tend to be the ones that provide the respite type services to the patient's family so that they can go out to dinner or they can they'll go in and they'll read to the patient and do things like that to help the families have some sense of normality.
Right.
Wow. So holding volunteers to performance standards, that's got to be a whole different trick too. Is there some science best practice behind that?
I'm sure there is. And remember, these are volunteers. These are people who want
they
to
want
do
to
this.
Right. Well, they've typically gone through the process themselves and they were touched by how they were treated,
right.
I think,
definitely.
A lot of them.
But whether you're a volunteer or you're on staff, and no matter how good you are at this today, a competency in this arena is a moving target. So there's new information, new training, new skills. So you've talked to that a little bit, how you bring new information into this.
There are several ways. And one thing that we have to remember in home care and in hospice is that regulations and procedures are constantly
are there regulations?
Changing. Oh, wow. Yes, yes.
That changes everything.
And it seems like the government sits around and think, you know, what can I throw
you.
At them next?
I'm trying to help you.
So we have a very structured plan on reviewing and keeping our material updated, using, of course, our subject matter experts.
Right.
And we also use different methods of getting information out to our clinicians. Our online university is one aspect. Of course, we also use email and newsletters.
Do you use tablets or kind of mobile devices as well?
Yes, we do. Each clinician has a handheld tablet that they use to capture the patient information and send that information back to their agency locations.
I mean, there's just layer on top of layer in this world of viewers of instructional design. I got to believe it's not this complex in many environments. You've got regulations, you've got volunteers, you're doing soft skills, you're doing technical skills. You got this has got to be more complex than most environments.
And that's, you know, we have the tablets. We also have the systems back in the agencies that we have to train the agency staff on agency operations as well as their technical piece. And then we have the whole support team, our corporate office, that takes care of our marketing, our legal, human resources, payroll and billing, and that's a whole nother training element.
Right, and those skills are so disparate, there's nothing in common between those.
Exactly. I mean, I could be a rock star instructional designer at a software firm, and I may or may not be even worth having a conversation with in terms of your recruit. How in the world did you get someone that can even, you know, begin to be a good candidate for this kind of thing?
Well, right now we are hiring. And we are looking for instructional designers. The challenge with finding instructional designers is that we need people, or we're looking for people who want to come in and roll their sleeves up and really get into design. Now, we have subject matter experts that we partner them with, and that might be a clinical subject matter expert, or it could be operations or technology. What we need is someone that can come in and they want to design and develop content.
Right.
What we found is that most people with those skill sets, and they have they understand the authoring tools, they are independent contractors making a lot of money, and they're doing it their way. And the ones that want to come in to the office and work, they may have their master's, their PhDs, and they want to come in and captain the ship, when right now what we need are deckhands and not captains. So
that's right.
That's our challenge.
I'm going to steal that, because that's what we need around here. We need right at Business Radio. We need deckhands, not captains.
Do you look towards, do they have to have nursing background? Like, so they have to be nurses and trainers, or you?
We would never hire anyone if that were the case. What we would love to have people with home care backgrounds or healthcare backgrounds. That is always a plus. That's less training on our end. It is very difficult to find.
That has
the combination of both. What we're really looking for is someone that is strong in instructional design development and someone that knows how to use the standard authoring tools and can work autonomously, because our location is in Louisiana, and it would be great if everyone could live in Louisiana, but then there wouldn't be any room left in Louisiana.
It's not that big.
Right. So we need someone that is used to working autonomously.
Now, do they come from a certain industry historically? Have you found that they are typically from a certain industry, or they come from all over the place?
All over the place. The people that have come with some healthcare background have been the most successful.
Like a hospital, or maybe
like a hospital or a nursing home, they've been the most successful, or even the pharmacy, because they understand the lingo.
Right.
So what's your backstory? How did you get started in this?
Well, I started out in home care. I have a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration, and I was a branch manager for a home healthcare agency for a while. And then I moved to one of the top three home care companies in the country, and I was a area operations specialist. So I was responsible for the operation efficiencies for 29 locations in 4 states. So I did a lot of traveling. And with that, I also facilitated for our regional corporate training department. And then I fell in love and I got married and had a baby and couldn't figure out how I was going to do as much traveling in that environment. But I was blessed that the director of education called me when I was on maternity leave and offered me a job. They were moving into a new arena. They were going to launch a synchronous training using Blackboard, and she wanted me to go to training and learn how to design, develop, and deliver that. And that kicked off my career. And then a couple of years later, they wanted to move into e-learning, so I was sent off to learn how to
be. Oh, so the same company the whole time?
The same company. I spent 17 years with a healthcare, the home care company.
Wow. So once they kind of adopted you, you were all in there, huh?
That's fantastic.
Yes, it was a great opportunity.
And so you've grown with them. The landscape's changed dramatically over 17 years.
It really has. It really has. I can remember developing with authoring tools where you had to tell every letter how many pixels to move, you know? And now they have authoring tools where you just press a button and things happen, you know?
Automagically.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at this thing from a little different lens, if we could, for a few moments. As a consumer, my folks are getting on up in years. Maybe some type of event happens where we need the home care. How do I go about shopping for home care? What are some intelligent questions to ask? What are some red flags to look for? I don't know, what are some green flags to look for? Give us a little counsel on that front, if you would.
You can go to, I always recommend that people go to the Medicare.org site to look at some of the statistical data on patient satisfaction surveys. That will tell you how each of the home care companies are performing. Mm-hmm. Also go to their website and look at what their focus is. Look at their philosophy. See if patient care and delivery is at the center of what they do. And that's one thing that I look for in working for a home care company. I want to be able to have an impact on the care that is being delivered, not just making a paycheck. I can work anywhere and even independently to make a paycheck.
Right.
And I also, they should also look at the type of services that are provided, not only nursing care, but can they provide the whole realm, therapy, social services, home health aid. What kind of divisions do they have? Do they have a hospice? What if I need that later on? So look, do your research, do your due diligence, and make sure that they can offer the care that is needed from a patient perspective from start to finish.
Now, I want to give a little plug for hospices, and I'm sure you'll back this up. Hospice is one of those places that a person who goes through it always wishes they had learned about it sooner.
Yes.
And so why is that?
Well, I'll let you speak to that, Regina.
Well, the whole process is very trying on the family. It's trying from an emotional standpoint, from a financial standpoint, and a physical standpoint, a physically draining. And hospice care is not just about the patient again. It's about the patient family.
Right.
And by the time they realize that they could have those services, they're burnt out.
Right.
And
they can get them very early on the process. You can have conversations about hospice very, very early on, well before you need it. But just to have it kind of in your back pocket, I have never, in all the years of when I was doing that Eugeria show, I had never, and we talked to all the hospice people in town, but it was time and time again, the patient was always, wow, I wish I would have known about that 6 months ago. I wish I would have known about this a year ago. And they always tend to think that it's for the last week or the last
month. Well, that was my thought, honestly.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not that at all. It's not that at all.
I mean, just knowing the type of services that are out there, the hospice can provide you with resources, a list of resources or contacts that you can use to help you prepare financially, to help you do
the
burial planning.
So many services. It's really, it's kind of a hidden gem that's out there in healthcare that people just don't know about, or they don't want to think about because, you know,
yeah, that's
we have
probably
a problem
part of it too.
With death in this culture.
Right.
Now, getting back to the instructional design element, how do you guys handle the constant certifications and all of the educational kind of upkeep that all of the nurses and the caregivers have to have? Or do you guys help in that way at all?
Oh, definitely. That's one of our biggest recruiting tools is to be able to provide those continuing education credits for free because they are extremely expensive. Yes,
wow.
They are free for our employees. And the way that we do that, the first thing that we do is we look at our patient base to see what diseases we are treating, our primary diseases, and then we build curriculum around that so that not only are we developing courses that offer CE credits, but they're also improving those skill sets that our patients need.
Right, so it's like a triple win there.
Exactly. And we have a CE, a continuing education nurse planner, that works with ANCC, which is the Nursing Certification Board, to ensure that those courses are developed according to their standards. And there's no one certification board for therapists, so that CE nurse planner also works with the states, the individual states, to get CE credits for the therapist.
Now, is all this harder to come by? I'm kind of back to the consumer side of things. Is all of this harder to come by if you live out in rural areas, or are home care companies getting better and better about serving those farther reaches?
You know, it's funny that you ask that. Different home care agencies focus on different demographics.
Mm-hmm.
When the first company that I worked with, the one I was with for 17 years, they focused on large metropolitan areas.
Right.
The company that I'm with now, our focus is on those rural areas.
Oh, that's their sweet spot.
That's their sweet spot.
How cool is that?
Now, remember, we do a lot of business shows, and one of them is about emerging enterprises. And we had a person talk to us about a whole kind of online virtual doctors coming to communicate with schools, like to talk to kids in rural areas that didn't have access to maybe medical care, where the doctor could kind of assess them just through like webcams. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any of that coming down the pike regarding home health care?
Well, I'm not sure about the visual, but we do telehealth with
telehealth?
Our patients. So we do have devices out in the patient's home where they are in constant communication with our clinicians as needed.
Isn't that amazing? That changes the game for everybody.
Yeah, and they can hook up to the device, and it sends their vitals right to the agency.
Over the telephone.
And they can tell if there's a problem or something.
Correct.
Just without having to actually come into an office.
Right. We have a team that monitors that. Yes.
Wow. That's amazing.
And that's another training need.
Well, and let's talk about that a moment. Future direction for training in this arena obviously includes us. What are some of the other things on the horizon, you think?
One of the things that I am focused on is doing research in how we provide content to our clinicians at their point of need via their handheld device. When they're in the patient's home, let's say they're debriding a wound or they're dressing a wound, it would be nice if they could click a button and see it being done, or they could click a button and ask questions or put in some parameters and see how to perform that treatment. So we're really in the process of digging into that to see what it is that we can do to make some of that happen.
Man, it's amazing. Technology's just really just changed the game.
It's awesome. I love it.
Do you find that people are embrace it, or you have to embrace it almost because it's just like a wave that just keeps coming? You can't stop it even if you wanted to.
I think that people have to embrace it. However, there are some that fight it tooth and nail. The average age of our clinicians is in the mid-40s. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with people just out of nursing school that may have taken the majority of their classes online. They're really into social media.
Right,
and
so they get it.
Want more.
Right, it's the 60-year-old nurse maybe that you're having a problem with.
Exactly. And the reality of it is there is nowhere for these clinicians to go where they do not use technology. They use it in the hospital setting, in the doctor's office.
Right.
Setting in home.
The genie's
care.
Out of the bottle. You can't put
it's
it back
coming.
In.
It's coming.
There's probably a more elegant way to ask this question, but don't we also have this bumper crop of older people that need these services for the next 10,
right.
20, 30 years?
No, there's a lot of job security in Regina's world, right?
Right?
Yes. My job is pretty secure.
Right, because the population's aging dramatically, and the needs are only going to get more and more.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I chose healthcare administration as my major is because healthcare is pretty recession-proof. Mm-hmm. There is going to always be a need. When I first went to college, I was majoring in accounting, and I just saw a pamphlet on healthcare administration and all of the opportunities that it afforded, and I said, hey, this is job security.
So you had an accounting brain, and you moved into this world. Is there similar? Is that a common thing?
I think there's a lot of similarities because I'm very detailed.
Detail-oriented,
good
right?
at putting puzzles together, right? Figuring things out, and that right. plays right into what I do.
But there's also a people element that there maybe isn't as much in an accounting world, so mm-hmm. that you're happy with that, the people part of your job?
Oh, yes. I've often been called a social butterfly.
Well, she's not scared of complexity, obviously. I mean,
that's
you heard
right.
her talk about the complexity of the responsibilities that you had in your previous work, and obviously there's plenty of that here.
Oh, definitely. I'm not afraid of that. Bring it on.
What about the bureaucracy with all the regulations and stuff like that? Is that a challenge for you?
It is challenging. The challenge in it is to make sure that all of the content is always up to date because
right.
we are liable for anything that occurs to our patients.
And aren't they
our
changing like all the time?
All the time. Now, they're good at letting us know when changes are coming, but we don't know the detail until it hits and they say, okay, we're going to roll this out in a month. So we have to look at all of our content, get it updated.
We need the training yesterday.
Yes.
Now, so they tell you conceptually that there's a change coming, but they don't tell you exactly what that change is until the last minute? Is that typically how it goes?
That's about right, yes. They'll say, well, we're looking at changing how we implement this law, and this is what it might impact. And it
might? They say it might impact?
It might.
And then what do? You just wait until it
Well, we do have management staff that, you know, they follow it and they attend the meetings. They read all of the regulations and they let us know as they get information what we can expect.
All right. So you could use some help or at least some awareness out there for recruiting. Yeah. So let's make sure that we're clear about maybe a little bit about what the opportunity is in general and a way for them to reach out and talk with you. Would that be helpful?
That would be great.
Okay.
All right.
We are looking for instructional designers. We're looking for someone that can provide a work sample. Mm-hmm. We're someone that has developed an Articulate, Captivate, maybe Storyline. I know that's relatively new. Someone that has a proven history of being able to go through the ADDIE process and design and develop and evaluate content. And we are hiring at least two designers right now.
Wow.
And how can they reach out? A website or a phone number or email?
Well, they can email me at regina.owens@lhcgroup.com.
And the website for the company is lhcgroup.com?
Correct.
What an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. This has been incredibly informative for me. You probably knew all this stuff, right?
Yeah, me. My background.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming and joining us this morning. You got to come back sometime.
I would love to. I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and our producer, Kevin Finn. Our guest this morning, Regina Owens, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.